Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, we are live. I'm still waiting our guests to call in. It's the Patriot Nation Radio Show. I'm Mark Hoffman.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Don't forget our friends at Liberty Rush.
Thank you for listening to Patriot Nation Radio, 347-637-3942.
Attention conservatives. Big social media is targeting conservatives like you and me in an effort to silence us and the truth. The free speech social media that you have waited for is here at LibertyRush.com. No longer do you have to be distracted by fake news. Join the war on fake news at LibertyRush.com. The official alternative with no libtard rhetoric. Guaranteed. LibertyRush.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
Yes, indeed, folks. It is the Patriot Nation Radio Network. You want to make sure you head on over to www.blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Nation right away and check the archives. I was off a little while, but my counterpart and partner James Bostic had his show, A Conservative Perspective. You can hear that two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. He's doing great stuff over there. And as you know, it's pretty obvious, the world is in panic. Oh my God, it's the end of the world. We have a pandemic. I have Dr. Elena George with us from Atlanta today, and we're going to talk about everything that surrounds this whole pandemic. I've been hashtagging Scandemic. I want to say hello to everybody in the live feed. Gary Binford, Nation Savers 2020. Alex, he's there. Gary Beck is there. Don is there. Scott Bannister, Francis, Dean. We're having fun. Please share and get this audience cranking so we can really have a good show, because we're going to be getting some good insight from a doctor, Dr. Elaine George from Atlanta, Georgia. There's so much stuff and speculation and things flying around. I was just sitting around thinking, hey, you think maybe, and let's see some comments when I make this statement. You think possibly the swabbing for the coronavirus is also DNA harvesting for some data bank, maybe, health data bank, where they put your name there and go, the coronavirus test. And they got a DNA sample with every one of them to prove who you are and that you would. And now they got this database. I don't know. Maybe I'm a conspiracy-minded thinker sometimes, but who knows? You never know. Are they harvesting DNA and using COVID-19 as a ruse to do so? Seems like they're up to so many nefarious things. Like, there's a lot of theories flying around, like chips in the vaccine perpetrated by Bill Gates. They're going to put, this microchip in the vaccine so they can electronically track you. I watch sci-fi movies. I listen to things. I watch things, So it's not be. I think sometimes Hollywood is foreshadowing future things. Because, if you listen to the whole thing, the Hollywood elites and the political elites with their underground tunnels and their trafficking and all this other stuff, I recently heard the most disturbing audio captured from the John Podesta's laptop. I listened to about 10 seconds and my blood curdled and I thought, oh my God, I think I've been traumatized by that audio. I will not share it. I will not spread it around. I will not let anybody hear that audio. It should be banned. I understand freedom of speech, but it's so graphic and so blood-curdling. And to know that people do this to children and to other human beings tears me apart inside. And it's just pray for America and pray for our children. Pray for those that are evil, that they would wake up and go, oh, my God, I can't believe what I'm doing here. And just blow the whistle and say something. Save the children. But anyway, sorry about that. I got a little off track. My job's now got me on second shift. It's kicking my butt. I don't get enough sleep. I get too much sleep. I don't know what's going on half the time. I don't know what day it is. But I know it's Wednesday, and we got a show, and I'm going to bring in my feature guest. I saw her. She was on another show. Gary, tell me the name of the show with Raquel. Rocky and Gary was there on the show. And our guest today, Dr. George, was there. I'm going to bring Dr. George on right now. We're going to talk about all things COVID. Welcome to the show. Good morning, doctor. Thank you so much. I've unmuted the microphone. Maybe a...
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Elaine George from Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Good morning. Uh-oh. Went away again.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
There she is. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Hey, nice to be with you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got on a little rant there about an audio clip that I heard, and it was very disturbing, extremely shocking to me. I think I might have experienced some PTSD or something listening to it almost. I don't know. Mm. It kind of freaked me out, but it's out there, and it came from, it's Rocky and the Wolfman Show at the World Integrity News Network, and my friend Gary and Raquel. that's where I first heard you and saw you. And I thought, wow, you know, and to hear things from a doctor, this is good. First, let's get a little background on who Dr. George is. Who are you, doctor? Tell the people so they have an idea of your experience and your background and who you are. And for me as
sure,
well.
I'd be happy to. I'm a solo ear, nose, and throat doctor practicing in Atlanta. I'm originally from New York. I did my training in New York at Mount Sinai School of Medicine for medical school, Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat for ENT. I did my general surgery at Lenox Hill, Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and New York Hospital. And after I left residency, I moved to Atlanta and opened my private practice after 3 years living in Atlanta. So I really have a very close-up view of our healthcare system and all the changes that have come to pass and where we're going. And this is a system that is not about healthcare anymore. It's about control. I care about what I do. I took the Hippocratic Oath. My practice is an extension of that oath, which means I'm an advocate for my patients. And I want to make people aware of what's going on because it's not right. So that's everything in a nutshell.
But what I think I noticed, pharmaceutical companies and doctors, in some cases, not all doctors, of course, there are some. I have a doctor here in my hometown that I really like. I think he's a genuine guy. He's a family man, and he really cares for his patients, and you can tell. He's not in it to push pills, but I think some of these doctors are out there to push pharmaceuticals, and we don't have healers anymore. We have symptom treaters. Do you see that across the spectrum at all in your experience?
That is how our healthcare system, Rockefeller, started. You know, they got involved with the medical schools. And again, you have to follow the money. And when the medical schools started getting payments to help them with medical education and to run research projects, then it changed from being a system where you're treating the patient, the whole patient, to one of a sick presentation, right? It's about treating a disease. And if the healthcare system is driven by the pharmaceutical industry, then obviously the bent is going to be towards taking a pill to fix the problem, as opposed to prevention and treating the symptom. And we're now in a grid. It's a huge system that even if doctors want to practice a holistic style of medicine in this system, they're really put upon. They're outliers. They're disruptive physicians. We're seeing this with the COVID situation, where doctors want to prescribe something like hydroxychloroquine, and they're being prevented from doing that. Some doctors are being brought up to their medical boards. Governors are stopping us from practicing in individual healthcare. So this is not something that we actually have control over sometimes. It's what's being foisted on us, and patients need to understand that.
Right. And the whole COVID-19 thing, is there seems to be some kind of underlying problem there in reference to the funding. I don't know if this is fact or not, so I'll ask. And reports are coming out that doctors and hospitals are getting large payments just for a COVID diagnosis. Some numbers were $13,000 just for the doctor to say, yep, this person has COVID-19 and that hospital got $13,000. And then if the person was placed onto a ventilator, they got $39,000. These are the numbers that I've seen. I don't know if those are factual numbers or if this is even true. Is there any truth to that?
There actually is truth to that, except it's not the doctors who are making money. It's the hospitals. You know, this is system that is a very top-down system, and the hospitals control access. They control access to physicians, access for patients to the hospital, and they're the ones that are getting the reimbursement. As a matter of fact, it's not really well reported, but there's been doctors and nurses all over the country that have been furloughed, that have had their salaries cut during this healthcare crisis. So I want to be clear. We always are the face of medicine, doctors and nurses, but we don't control, unless we're independent and solo practitioner, run our own private practice, we have no control of the cost of healthcare. That is driven by the cost structure of the hospital itself. And yes, you're right. The hospitals get paid based on codes, and the WHO came out with codes for COVID-19. And there are actually two codes, which I found interesting. One is you've been diagnosed with COVID-19. The other is you're suspected of being diagnosed. You've never been diagnosed. There's no proof, but you're counted in the same, you know, numerator as if you had it. And all that's done really is boost the numbers of people who have unfortunately succumbed to the disease and those that have it. And it's not a valid number, in my opinion, and unless you actually have documented having the disease, those are the folks who should be counted. The government has, because of the care situation and, you know, the legislation passing back to the hospitals, they are getting paid a differential based on COVID diagnoses and COVID patients, because the mindset is you have to spend so much energy and resources that you need to reimburse the hospital back for those particular patients. You're depending on what they say their number is, aren't you? So it's in, you know, follow the money, in my opinion, always. Not saying that all hospitals do it, but let's face it, there may be a cohort of hospitals that are saying every patient that I'm seeing is COVID so they can get a better reimbursement. I wouldn't say that never happens.
Now, there's a video floating around of two doctors out of California, and their claim that antibody tests and other things are showing the numbers to be extremely more widespread than what originally has been reported. They're reporting that we have 1 million cases in America, and their claim is more like 11 million cases because of antibody tests. And they extrapolated it over the United States based on a study in Santa Clara, California. And they extrapolated that over the whole United States, and it comes out to about 11.5 million people have been exposed, and like 8 million people never knew they had it. Do you find that to possibly be the truth in the case here? In this, I think it might be true. These guys wouldn't sit there and put their whole career on the line and spill that out if it wasn't true.
I've seen that study, and I think I actually agree with it. I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor, and in October, November, December, I saw a load of patients coming into my practice with, I've had flu symptoms for 2 months. I lost my sense of taste and smell, and I actually think that they had it, and we didn't know at the time. And as this crisis unfolded, I stopped seeing patients with that complaint. February, March, I saw no patients with symptoms, and nobody with asking me to test them for COVID-19. So I think it actually has been here longer than we all think.
I agree. I think my father-in-law made it into the hospital with pneumonia back in August, but he's like, I don't feel like sick. I have a cough and a fever, but I don't have, my nose ain't clogged. I feel good, but this cough and this fever won't go away. And they put him in the hospital and said he had pneumonia. So I was wondering, thinking maybe possibly he had it. And then a friend of mine at work went on a cruise, and he came back from the cruise, and he was deathly ill. And one by one, everybody at work got deathly ill with a cough that lasted more than 3 weeks. But they didn't. No one had, like, really bad symptoms. That people stayed home for, I had a fever yesterday. So I stayed home, and then after the fever, they woke up. I had no fever after, like, 8 hours, so I came to work. And I'm thinking maybe possibly, based on some of the things I read and seen, that they had it back in October and November.
It's possible. Been here longer than we all think.
I have to believe that. Just based on, like I said, things I've read and seen, and I'm sure that it's with your expertise and being a doctor and seeing patients, it possibly seems that way as well, no?
It does. But, I'd say look at this whole process, as an overview. If you look at all the folks that have been diagnosed, most people recover. There's a large percentage that are symptom-free. And the unfortunate side of it is that people who succumb to it are the same cohort of patients that usually have a problem when flu season comes around. Seniors, people with underlying medical problems. So this is, after we've gone through this long enough, it's kind of bearing out that it's not as deadly as we think it is. I think it's more infectious, but I'm not sure the numbers bear out that it's more deadly than the flu.
And I looked at some numbers myself, and from March 15th to April 15th, I believe was the dates I checked. Which statistic was I going for here? 65 and older. And with underlying health conditions should be the ones that are being quarantined, because never in history have we quarantined healthy people, as far as I could tell. Have you ever seen healthy people forced to quarantine before?
No, I actually haven't, and that's the whole definition of quarantine, is separating people who are ill from healthy population. This is a little bit of a reverse of that.
All right. And then I see also, we have to release these criminals from jail because they might get coronavirus, and at the same time they're arresting people who are standing on a corner with a sign saying end the shutdown, putting them in jail.
It's pretty ironic. It's ironic, I think.
So what do you think the future of COVID-19 is at this stage? Do you think it's going to come back in the fall? Are we going to have COVID season? And is this going to be like a normal way of life now?
What do you mean by normal? What we're doing now with separation and that sort of thing? What do you mean?
Yes, social distancing, face masks, oh my goodness, 21 million people on unemployment because we got a social distance. We can't go back to work because it's COVID season. Is it going to happen twice a year where we have to shut everything down, wear masks, do social distancing?
I certainly hope not. I think that we didn't know what this was going to be, when this first came to pass and it started to be. You had to prepare for the worst case scenario. I do get that. But now that we're on the other side, most of the country is flattened or starting to decrease, we need to have a take stock of where we want to go as a society, and personal liberty, personal freedom versus, you know, the good of the many outweighing the needs of the few type of mentality. Is it valid to be this aggressive based on what we're finding out about how this disease works? I understand that if you're fragile, if you have multiple medical problems, if you're a senior, take care of yourself and stay away from crowds and that sort of thing. But after we pass this, I mean, I don't know if you saw the press conference with the scientist talking about heat and sunlight and excellent personal hygiene being very effective at lowering the amount of virus and actually killing it in instances. That's not being taken into consideration. I think that should be. We have to think about the consequences. There's other sides of this where people are losing their livelihoods, where people emotionally are so devastated they may never recover.
It's worse than the disease.
Exactly. You can't be in that position.
And right now, people who go into financial destitution, lose everything, their home, their car, everything. Now their wife is mad. Their wife packs a bag. They get divorced. Everything's going crazy. Domestic abuse, child abuse, alcoholism and drug abuse, and suicide. That's one of the stats I was going to look at and talk about too. Are probably going to go through the roof. These are repercussions. We'll probably wind up losing more people to suicide this year than to COVID-19, because that's the stat I was looking at before that I lost my train of thought. As of that time frame before that I said, March 15th to April 15th, during that time frame, there was 8,000 more suicides than COVID-19 deaths in America. And I didn't hear anybody screaming and crying about the 22 veterans a day that are killing themselves. That seems like a health crisis. Don't you believe that to be a health crisis too? And that if more people are dying that way, we should maybe focus our attention elsewhere, like to mental health?
It's a lot of things that we should be focusing on. I agree with that. I also agree that there's a lot of people who have suspended their health care because they can't get treated. You know, there's elective surgeries have stopped. Elective radiology and diagnostic studies have stopped, but these diseases continue, and this is a silent majority. And what happens if you go from a stage 1 to a stage 3 disease during this time? No one's talking about that. So we actually have to look at the bigger picture. We've been concentrated and focused on the COVID-19. Now it's time to expand that and to go into real time. And I find that it's unfortunate that people who are making these health decisions by large measure are not physicians, and they're not practicing physicians. We need to be given a voice so that we can speak for our patients, and that's happening, thank God. But it's time to listen to the people on the front line, on the ground floor, who understand the situation, who will take care of the issue, whether that means writing a prescription for something that the patient and the doctor decide together is important, or doing a procedure that's integral to the care of the patient. This has to stop. This roadblock needs to stop, because I think we're running on a course that's not sustainable. And God forbid there's a patient who suffers because of not being, blind to the whole bigger picture, because you're so focused on this one thing.
Now, the president recently signed, maybe not recently now, he's been getting ready to have an election. His first term's almost over. The right to try if all else is failing. So don't patients have the right to go, listen, president signed it. I have a right to try it. Nothing else seems to be working, and I fear for my life. I want to try the hydroxychloroquine, and then they take it with something else, erythromycin or something. And I want to try that. Don't we have a right as patients?
It's an executive order, right? I agree. I don't understand why that's not being honored. You do have a right to try based on that. And That's a great question. I can't answer why that's not being honored.
That's
maybe
something to look in.
They should, but patients should also demand it as well.
Right. I think I just raised a really, really important question, and no one seems to be asking that. I hope that somebody in media right now is listening, or somebody with some connections is watching, and they go ahead and talk to one of the reporters that are going to be at today's conference and maybe ask that question. Crying out loud, that's a really good question. You have the right to try. I want to try it. It's been proven to work. I want to live. Give me the hydroxychloroquine. Now, some folks have been going to, places where they graph death rates, suicide, heart attack, cancer, gallbladder surgery, whatever. And death rates in other areas seem to be going down, like, say, heart attack. All of a sudden, there's, 20% less heart attacks and so many more COVID-19 patients. Are they counting these patients who have heart attacks and pass away as COVID-19 deaths, even if they don't have it, and especially if they do have it and have a heart attack? They're not classifying them as heart attacks, they're classifying them as COVID-19 deaths.
I've heard that, and that's the second the second code that I told you about. As long as you have a suspicion of COVID, you should put that down as a diagnosis. So there is some evidence and some question as to whether everybody who's coming through, whether they have a stroke, heart attack, they're being counted that way, because that is definitely a concern. Plus, you have to remember people are self-isolating, right? So they're not going to the hospital with other medical problems because they don't think they want to go. They're not allowed to go, or they feel they're not allowed to go to the ER and get treatment. So there's also a skew in that area as well, less people presenting with the problem.
Right. My mother-in-law had got sick and needed to go to the emergency room. And my father-in-law brought her over to the emergency room, and they kept him out. They wouldn't let him go in. They said, you can't come in, because he's older. He's 78. He has underlying health conditions. They said, sorry, sir, you can't come in here. Only your wife can come in. She's the one being treated, and they chased him away. Is that common during the COVID, that they're chasing, spouses away and, only letting the sick person into the hospital be treated?
That's what I've been hearing across the nation, because you want to avoid excessive exposure to people who are helping expose people with COVID and vice versa. So that's pretty much the norm as far as I've been reading.
It makes sense. Sometimes I feel like all this extra sanitizing, cleaning, face masks, avoiding germs, I have this deep-seated suspicion that a mighty superbug is going to come out of this that's going to make MRSA look like Romper Room or the Magic Garden. Do you think that's a possibility?
I can't answer that. I don't know, tell you the truth, and I pray that doesn't happen.
I pray every day. That's part of my prayer, because I when we were kids, I don't know how old you are, ma'am. I'm not going to ask, but when I was a kid, I went out in the yard. I played in the dirt. I ate mud pies. We rolled around in germs all day long. We were little walking germ pots, and we didn't get sick a lot. Now it seems the kids stay inside. They avoid everything, and they played on their tablets, which have germs on them themselves, but different than what we were exposed to. And we didn't get sick that much. Is there a correlation between that and COVID-19? And I just have this feeling somehow, some way, our way of life is causing some of these issues to be worse. Is that a possibility in your eyes?
I would just talk about the immune system in general. We don't get as much sun as we used to. We don't do outdoor activities as much. We put on sunscreen, which blocks some of the UV light. Vitamin D3 is really important. Our food supply has pesticides and all sorts of things in it, antibiotics. We're eating fast food. We're not eating whole foods. Our nutritional status has dropped as a whole, and that puts you at risk for anything, whether it's bacterial or viral. And I think this is a wake-up call for us to start going back to basics. And it really does come down to the natural things. Wash your hands. Make sure you get excellent sleep, you know, 7-8 hours of sleep if you can do it. Make sure what you put in your mouth, you know where it came from. And it's as natural and as pesticide-free and ideally organic. And those things that are the front line of health, doesn't matter what the process is. That's what people need to get back to. Instead of depending on a pill to fix everything.
Right. That's one of the things. In order for me to take any kind of medicine, I have to be in sheer agony. I don't even like to take Tylenol. I would rather sit there in agony and let nature take its course than take medicine. I had my appendix back in 2010 burst, and they did the surgery on me. And for the 3 days right after surgery, I was refusing the pain medication. And they thought, sir, are you okay? You know, you sure? I'm like, I don't like medicine. I don't want to become addicted to your pain medicines. I hear the horror stories of addiction, and I don't want to be no part of that. And they said, sir, you're not going to have any problem. Your system is cleaned out every 24 hours. It's flushing you with fluids. You're not going to become a junkie from the pain medicine here at the hospital trying to help you after surgery. Mm-hmm. So then I said, okay. And for a day and a half, I took pain medicine until I could take the pain without it. That's how extreme I am. I don't like medication. I think, to a degree, there are some things you got to take, you know. An antibiotic when you have a bad infection, it's helpful. But I resist.
I agree.
And my son sees that. And my wife is very sick. She's got autoimmune disease, psoriatic, rheumatoid arthritis, HLA-B27 genetic thing that causes an eye problem and pulmonary fibrosis. She has all these issues. And she only takes medicine when she needs it. And she needs it. But we don't like, I think there's some kind of thing going on with the pharmaceutical companies, and I don't know. Maybe I'm just paranoid, and I listen to too many conspiracy theories, and my hat is half tinfoil sometimes, I don't know. But I just think there's something with the pharmaceuticals and the opioid crisis. I think it's a whole thing. I think there's a vicious cycle and a vicious circle, and it's all connected somehow. And it's all about money. Like you said earlier about the COVID thing, it's follow the money. And that's in almost every instance that you see something, follow the money. And usually that leads you right to the source of the issue. You know, so.
It does. But, you know, what we do have is, let me just stop you for 1 second. One thing that we do have is freedom of choice. So I think that people need to do their own due diligence. They need to do their research. Unplug from the TV and this mass, messaging that's all telling us to be afraid and to not think and to have someone take care of it for us because they love us. That's not where we need to be. I think everybody individually has personal responsibility. That means you need to find out for yourself what's going on and how you want to approach it. Because if we let the system continue the way it is, we're going to lose our choice. They're going to tell us you have what you need to put in your body, where you need to be, what job you need to have. This is the future if we let this go. And that's not fear, that's fact. We're seeing this happen in certain states. That's a wake-up call.
I had a nice lady on the show. She calls herself the Common Core Diva. And she was talking about the STEM program at schools, science, technology, engineering, and math. And they're steering these kids. And they in those directions, and when they find their strength, that's where they point them to, and they kind of are pushing them into careers without having a choice, without thinking about it. And I think that's the beginning of that, is them telling us where we can work and what we can do by how they figured it out in school. That could be very scary. And we're slowly moving towards that totalitarian kind of society where listen to the government. They'll take care of everything. And if you don't like it, we have gulags over here for you. You know, and I think that's a very big possibility, and people need to wake up and realize that healthcare is 5% of the economy, 20% of the economy, and has everything to do with your freedom. You know, they can collect information on you, they can get DNA from you without you, you know, they could just do it. You don't know. That's what I was thinking about some of these COVID tests. You know, oh yeah, pull up to this tent and we'll swab you. Are they collecting DNA for a database, a COVID-19 database? Yes, this person had it. This person tested positive for antibodies. This person had COVID-19 full-blown. But then now they have the DNA sample also. I don't know. Again, that's my tinfoil hat conspiracy side creeping out. And I think we all have that just a little bit. But if you're critical thinking and you think for yourself, you don't go full tilt into these conspiracies. You just chalk them up to being like, well, it's possible. You know, Hollywood does tell us a lot of the future in their movies. And then all of a sudden, there we are, what we've seen in the movies happening. And books, you know, because look at George Orwell, 1984. I mean, if we aren't in that, we aren't anywhere, you know. Great.
You can add in Brave New World, too, if you want to.
Yeah. And there's some great things coming out. There are some good people that are really trying to spread the truth and tell people what's happening, like the two doctors out of California. Do you think the accuracy of the antibody test is there, or is it not as accurate and maybe their numbers are skewed too? I have to believe that the numbers are really higher than what they're saying. But are the antibody tests accurate?
I think it's still, there's questions of it still out there as to how accurate it is. And I would hope and think that they're improving it in every iteration of that test. But this is an interesting point. We're testing, or they're talking about testing everybody. Again, just like quarantining everybody. When have we ever tested people who are healthy to prove that they're healthy? That's an interesting paradox, I think. I can understand if you're sick, but why would you test anybody at this point that doesn't have symptoms? And it's just, it's kind of a reversal of everything. It's like having the antibody means that you're still infectious. I don't understand that either. Usually you're protected. No matter what it is, measles, mumps, whatever, if you have antibody in your system, you've had it, you've fought it, you're not going to get it again. That's how immunology generally works.
Right. And that's like when I was a kid, I think the vaccines that we got, I think, was only 13 vaccines for things like mumps and measles and very few things, tuberculosis maybe, you know. And I wound up getting the mumps, even though I had the shot. Is that common with vaccines? Can you still get sick even though you had the vaccine?
Nothing's 100%.
Right.
And by the way, there's no vaccine for TB, just to put a little bow on that. Nothing's 100%. So you can't promise and tell somebody that you're going to be 100% protected from anything. Honestly, that's where this is a little bit trying to make something absolute when nobody can do that except God.
Right. Hallelujah. Amen. And that's the scary part. It seems like some of these politicians and people are trying to play God and tell people what they can do and how they can do it. It seems this Dr. Fauci, is he legit? I don't know. I think he's got some ulterior motives, maybe, because the more people are saying we have to open the economy, we have to get back to life, he keeps saying, we need to shut down even longer, and we got to get vaccines, and we can't ever shake hands again. The more that they say reopen, the more he doubles down on that. Is there something with that, Dr. Fauci, in your opinion?
I think the people need to look at his past. I think they need to do their own due diligence. But there are conflicts of interest, which he doesn't talk about, right? So there's connections with the vaccine industry. There's connections with the NIH and medical research that has gone on. It's just a question mark. And if we do anything in the healthcare field and we do talks at national meetings, we have to disclose if we have any relationship with anything that's and basically expose our potential conflicts of interest. I'd like to see this happen in this case. I think it'd be very interesting. And I think it would give people a fuller picture of why and what's going on. Because you're absolutely right. At one point, he says one thing and he completely reverses it. depending on where he is when he's saying it. Started off that this is just the flu. Everybody should don't worry about it. Don't panic. Don't wear a mask. Now everybody needs to wear masks and you need to self-distance. And it's like the goalpost keeps moving. Everything's going to get better when we hit a peak and we start to drop. Now it's going to just take longer. And it all leads to one answer. And it seems to be the vaccine, a vaccine, whatever that is. We can't go back to normal society until that's created. That seems to be the answer for everyone. I just question that personally.
In reality, does a vaccine kill a virus?
No.
Is a virus an actual living organism, or is it just a particle that makes you sick?
I think there's question marks on that. I'm not sure I know the answer to that completely, but I've heard that a lot of different theories about what a virus is, but I can't answer that. I don't do research in that field.
Right. And that's an interesting question that could be raised. And it just goes to show that if you sit down and you think about the whole picture, you can come up with good questions. Sometimes I think these media people are just going in there to cause trouble, asking silly questions. I wish they would ask real questions, you know, like that. What's the motive behind the media? What's the motive behind the media being this so hard as a pandemic and trying to scare everybody? Why are they fear-mongering so hard? That's what I don't understand.
One answer that could pop out immediately is just ratings, right? If people are glued to the TV with the next pronouncement of to ratchet up the fear, they're making money in this. That's the most obvious answer. I think there's underlying purposes behind it. This is a partisan media. I don't think anybody can argue that. Depends what station you're listening to. It's anti-government. Yeah. Anti-administration all day, resistance, when it all costs. I've heard now multiple times, never let a good crisis go to waste. Have you not heard that?
And some of these
bills that are being put out there, floated out there, are absolutely ridiculous. Green New Deal stuff. I read something that just blew me away yesterday where they want to bail out people who have mortgages and rent should never pay rent or mortgage again. And the owners of the property need to give up 10% ownership to their renters. That's what they're pulling out next. That makes no sense. So in order for the landlord to get money, they have to give 10% of their property to their renters. That doesn't even make sense. But this is the stuff that's coming out. They want single payer. And I guess, for me, the argument, I've always been against single payer, full disclosure. But this is an argument against single payer, this whole COVID rollout. It was the public-private partnership that fixed it, that had the ventilators created, that got the N95 mask done. Had this been just the government, we'd be really in bad shape right now.
Right on. You know it, because anything that the government's involved in turns out to be a train wreck in the long run. Here we got Social Security getting ready to tank on people like me who in 10 years are going to be ready for it. It's not going to be there for me, and I've been paying into it my whole life. But you got fence jumpers in Mexico who are getting $2,600 a month in Social Security payments and never paid a dime into it. So that anything the government puts their hands on, absolutely they destroy it and ruin it and mess it up. The private sector is the way to go. They for sure were synonymous in this response, and it was incredible to see people pulled together in this way. Even though it's not nearly as horrific as they say, the response by our first responders, our hospitals, our doctors, our just the American people in general was incredible. You know, I got to tell you, as a Constitution, freedom-loving American patriot, all this lockdown stuff was really irritating me. But I understand that. You know, and I have a lot of friends in hotspot in New York, and they lost a lot of people, people they know. People know people who died all over Long Island and New York City. And to them, it's real because it's really tearing through the community. And so because the feelings of others And because I know my wife has underlying health conditions, as angry as it made me, I wore a face mask. I washed my hands. I social distanced. I stayed home as much as possible. Because I care for my fellow person in the way they feel and think. And if everybody thought that way, we would have a great country. And look how we are getting along as people now over this. So there is actual good that comes out of it, even though it's stressful. You see the good in people. They really care about others. They don't want others to get sick. They want everybody to be healthy. And that's the nature of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we may be at disagreement with a liberal, but we don't want them to get sick and die. So we do what we can to make sure that they don't. So otherwise we won't have good spirited debate. We need liberals. We need the other side, you know, so we can have conversations and talk about the differences and try to iron stuff out. And hopefully through all of this, the lesson to be learned that we don't panic next time there's a pandemic and we go through all of this. If anything was learned, the economy is essential and it should stay open. Every job that pays an electric bill, a cable bill, a doctor bill, pays for grandma to get in a taxi cab to go see Dr., you know, Dr. Marcus Welby, MD. It's all connected. And we got to be Americans and be free and love each other, and we'll get through all of this. Even if you believe it's true or if you believe it's all a scandemic or a plandemic, if you think it was plotted, if you think it was released by China on purpose. I do hear that the National Health Institute is looking into and investigating the laboratory in Wuhan at this time. And you had said something earlier about don't let a crisis go to waste. And I saw a video, I believe it was from Hillary Clinton endorsing Joe Biden, where she's speaking about the COVID-19 crisis and never letting a crisis. This is a good crisis. We can't let this go to waste. Right out of her mouth. So they take advantage of crises and people's downtrodden times to push their agendas. And that's scary. I believe in the next stimulus, they may have even added another raise for Congress. I'm not sure. I have not looked at it fully. But wouldn't that be something?
I hope not. That would be awful. I mean, this is just another example of it's good enough for me, but not for you, right? So the Affordable Care Act, they grandfathered themselves out of that. They didn't have to do it as Congress members. Why aren't they not taking a pause in their in getting paid during this crisis like the rest of the country? They're still getting paid and they're not working. I mean, they're not in it with us. You know, I don't feel that they're suffering and they're sacrificing. They could care less. The whole second round of the PPP funding was pure politics, and it was like eating ice cream and laughing at all of us. I mean, there's no empathy for the country, even though they say they care. It's not what I'm seeing up there. It's horse trading,
right.
It's lobbyists, and it's the same sausage making, you know, system that they have. It's not those Congress folks making these laws. It's the lobbyists writing them. So, thousands of pages for what? What's in it? There's always something in it that's a poison pill. And overall, the name of the bill, whatever the outcome is usually the opposite. The Affordable Care Act is unaffordable. It's not healthcare,
right.
It's control. That's what that's rolled out to be. So that's what I think from a liberty-loving person like myself, and I'm sure you get as well, we need to handle our own business. If there's nothing else that we learn from this, you have to be prepared individually. You know, what you didn't know before, you know now. So you know you have to have certain supplies. You know you have to have certain amount of things own that you can control that keeps you out of this system because it's not a very helpful system.
I live in Hurricane Alley in the Sunshine State here. We have supplies on hand normally just in case. So, like, the rush on toilet paper, I couldn't believe my eyes. Like, I didn't understand what was going on with the toilet paper. I'm like, what? You know, if you're a normal house, you got enough toilet paper. I don't know. I have enough on hand usually because, all right, there might be a hurricane. We might be without power for a week. You might want to have at least a week's worth in the cabinet at all times, you know. But what
I
wonder
it.
What the panic toilet paper was.
To this day, I don't know. People were fighting over it. It was amazing. But, you know, this is the worst case scenario that we're living through now, and we're making it. And I love the fact that you're hopeful about this, because this is going to end. We want to make sure that we come out stronger at the end of this, as opposed to, and then I mean emotionally, I mean physically, I mean spiritually stronger. If we can get through this, we can get through anything, right? But
Amen.
We don't want to end up losing our rights in this.
I got to tell you, the closeness of my family being together more, I believe it was really helpful. We actually, spending more time together, got along better than when we don't, like when I'm working and the kids at the school, and then we all get together and for some reason our days are different. We don't get along as well. All of a sudden, the kids listening and the things are getting done and we're communicating. It's amazing. There is
That's
good
awesome.
In all of this. In all of this, there is some good. In some household, I believe it was helpful. Yes, domestic violence and child abuse and other things are probably increasing, but I think in other households, they're getting along and it's decreasing. That's all I can hope for. And that's what we need, is hope. And I think our leaders need to go, okay, look, this is the date. We're opening. People want to see a light at the end of the tunnel. Let's put a date on it. Let's say May 15th, everything opens back to normal. Something like that. I mean, May 15th. Let's do it. May 15th, everything opens. We're back in action. Some are like, well, there might be a second wave. Yeah, there's going to be a second wave. From what I can tell, we now have COVID-19 season, like the flu season. And we can't live like this. Next time it comes around, wear a mask. If you're 65 and older with underlying conditions, kind of stay home. They all kinds of great things. Like, you got DoorDash. They'll bring your groceries right to your front door. You never even have to leave. And you'll be safe. And we cannot crash this economy. The economy is going to be in some serious shape in a year from now if we don't snap out of it and get back to work. Where's all this money going to come from? If nobody's working and no one's taxes are coming out of their paychecks and they keep spending this money, where's it coming from? Sooner or later, there's going to be a tax increase, and it's going to be inevitable. We're going to all have to agree to it in order to bring our country back and make it great again. And that's coming from a conservative-minded person. Yes, all of this is going to wind up costing somebody. And it's always going to be the blue-collar, white-collar people who go to work every day, who break their backs to earn a paycheck. It's going to be on them. And that's the sad part,
It is. It really is. And, I think health is integral in that. Having your health, having peace of mind. That's how you go out there and gear up to go back into society and pick up where we left off. We have to have courage to do that. And I think we need to look at what's going on now. There are treatments out there already. There are treatments that are effective. We've heard stories. They're doing studies on them. I think there's a huge study out of North Dakota with the hydroxychloroquine. And the NIH is still working on it. If that turns out to be a treatment that is effective and valid, that should have the power to change the mindset and this direction, this movement towards isolation, and we'll never get back to normal, and we have to wait for the ultimate vaccine. I think that changes that dynamic, but that shows to be as effective as we all hope it will be. That would be a game changer, literally. We already know that summer's coming. That's going to help the situation. Now we just have to get in there and get back into the world and be brave and continue to depend on ourselves and each other, not the government so much, but us. And I see that happening across the country where people are like, we're going to handle this and we're going to do it in a responsible manner. We're not children. Thank goodness, there are a lot of people who are have enough gumption to do that. And it might take a few to be out there first before everybody gets it, you know, and comes out. But I think it's going to happen, and it's inevitable.
I believe, too, that I go out into the world every day. I could get hit by a bus. I could have a heart attack. I could get some bug and get sick and die. That's part of life. People get sick. People die. So to me, it's just like all the restrictions and all the restrictions on our liberty. Don't go outside. You can't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond me. I can't stand it because I'm a free being. And like I said, I understand and I care about my fellow man. So I put on a mask and I tried to do it, but it just gets me. And we can't give up liberty for a small sense of security. I'd rather live in dangerous freedom than in safe slavery any day. You know,
I think you're making an excellent point. You're making an excellent point. And we've done that. We've done self-isolation for, what is it, 40 days, a month and a half, whatever it is. And we've done that. Now we're just moving a goalpost. You're telling us if you've done it, but you have to do it more. When will ever be enough? It just seems like it'll never be enough. But the statistics and what's around us are giving us more information. If a majority of the country, or a growing number, have had it and are resistant to it, then why do you need to self-isolate everybody, right? I get it if you have a health problem, then you should have the most fragile folks still isolate, but everybody else should be able to start getting back to work. And again, we need a change in the mind system. Again, it's all about sickness. What about prevention? Taking multivitamins, vitamin D, vitamin C, vitamin A, zinc, selenium, boosting your immune response by getting sunlight, all these things, eating properly, like we discussed at the beginning of the show, actually become a barrier to getting sick. So if you can prevent that and help your system become an efficient barrier, that's really the key. It's not waiting till you get sick and hope to get treated. It's never getting sick at all. So it's a different mindset, in my opinion. And the vitamins actually work. This is not like we're talking pie in the sky. This is fact. The system is very self-forgiving if you get out of the way and let it heal.
I'm going to say something that I think is extremely important, too. I had teeth issues. And I had two teeth that had very bad cavities. One was infected. And I was dealing with it for a while. I'm like, it's going to get better, you know. And then, my phone, my live feed just shut out. My phone died. I got my teeth fixed. And I haven't got a cold. I haven't got the flu. I haven't got any ailment, a fever, nothing. Even when everybody at work was getting sick back in October and November, my father-in-law was sick in August. I didn't get sick. I had 2 years since I had my dental work, and I have not got sick at all. There's something to that, because when you have an infection in your mouth, your body's fighting the infection, and you are susceptible to other illnesses. So you got to take care of your teeth, and you'll be surprised how much healthier I got when I got those two teeth pulled out. And I'd really take care of my teeth now. You know, I'm getting old, and they're going to start wearing out. So I got to take care of them. And I think that's very important, is healthy mouth. Part of your health regime, as part of your taking vitamins. And things like vitamin C and vitamin A, probably healthy for teeth too, right? Vitamin D?
Yes.
So you want to take
Definitely.
These too, just part of your health regime and preventative medicine. That's what we should all be doing. Doctor, I want to thank you for your time today. Do you have any websites, any organizations, any things that you want to promote or direct people to? You got a book out, you want to write, anything you want to promote right now is
sure.
your time.
I have a website, drelaina, E-L-A-I-N-A, george.com. I have written blogs for years about this subject, and I also have a book called Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control and How Doctors and Patients Working Together Can Rebuild a Better System. You can get the book if you want to on that site as well. We have a radio show called Living in the Solution, which runs on Liberty Talk FM on Saturdays and Sundays, noon Eastern time. And you can listen to the podcasts that are archived on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and also on libertytalk.fm. And we've done a lot of shows recently on alternative ways to help mitigate and live with multiple medical problems, including COVID-19. I think people will find interesting. So this is about education. Our show is about patient information and about speaking the truth. So I think people might find both of those interesting.
Yes, indeed. And I'll be checking it out. I want to thank you so much for your time today, Doctor. Keep up the good work, and God bless everything that you do.
Thank you so much.
There you have it, folks. That's Dr. Elena George telling it like it is. God bless her and doctors like her. We need more doctors who are liberty-minded, who understand freedom of choice. Because, you know, they want to vaccinate everybody and do all this stuff. I think it comes down to my body, my choice, right? Isn't that what some people say all the time? My body, my choice. I don't want the vaccine and I don't want the test. I'm going to live my life. And so I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Without you, there is no show. And I'm going to wrap up the show here with my good friend Dave Bray, DaveBrayUSA.com. Music on a Mission, Storyteller Editions. That we'll have Dave on the show here pretty soon, maybe in a week or two. And we'll talk about his new music. And he was going to come on, but then COVID-19 struck and we were out. So I didn't do a show for like 3 months because, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But Dave Bray's got a great song that he made his own, kind of. I love it to death. It's his version of the Star Spangled Banner, as heard on Music on a Mission. If you're there listening, please rise. This is at Patriot Nation Radio. We rise to the flag and we kneel at the cross. God bless you. God bless America. It's the Star Spangled Banner, Dave Bray. DaveBrayUSA.com, Music on Mission, Storyteller Edition is out now. You can get that song, that version, right now. And just one last note, Nowhere in the Constitution does it say when a pandemic strikes, your constitutional rights are suspended. So remember the Constitution. Keep it there with your Bible. Until we meet again next Wednesday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Good day, good night. God bless you. Thank you, Doctor, so much for your time.